Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Kat Napsok for another edition of Spotlight Star Wars. This one's titled The Curious Case of Cor Sella. Here we are, it's 2016. We are in a post-Force Awakens world. I've seen it 5 times. How many times have you seen it? It's not a race. It's not a competition. I'm just enjoying seeing it. I did have that goal, as a lot of you know, to see it 9 times in the theater to erase the memory of seeing Phantom Menace 8 times in the theater back in 1999. I'll be honest, I don't know if I'm going to get to that. I don't know. 4 more times in a movie theater seeing the same movie right now is daunting to me. I know Force Awakens is going to have a bit of a long run, so I don't have to rush out to do this now. This isn't a comment on what I feel about The Force Awakens now. I still very much love this movie, but after I saw it the 5th time, there was a part of me that said, okay, I'm good. I'm good for a while. I didn't want to lose the love and luster of the film. It was almost like I was protecting myself from having to burn out too soon on this movie, which is possible. It is possible to burn out on the things you love. Oh, we're getting deep and philosophical here on Spotlight Star Wars. Where are you on your love of the movie? Force Awakens has become a hotly and highly debated movie because we as a society have nothing better to do than to debate whether or not this movie was actually good or not, and was Rey this, and had the writing that, and all that kind of stuff. Look, I'll tell you this. my gut reactions, which I posted on this podcast feed under the Spotlight Star Wars banner, you heard them all. I had some big questions coming out of it. After the first and even second viewing, there's some things I really didn't like about the construction of the story and some of the writing, and I still have some of that stuff. But after five times of seeing this movie, three more after I really had some questions, I've given up all that kind of stuff, and I just love this movie. I've just crawled up inside the Star Wars nerd bubble this movie has created, and I'm just enjoying it. And that's where I wish everyone else could get to. Look, if you don't like the movie, if you don't like Star Wars, or you saw it and thought that's what it was, that's it. That's fine. That's you. Max Landis going off on his rants on his Rhea, Mary Sue, and all that kind of stuff. Even he, because I've actually been in the same room with him talking about Star Wars The Force Awakens on air and off air, and I can assure you he actually does like the movie. He said to me after the Screen Junkies breakdown episode we did last 2 weeks ago, whatever it was now, after, you know, we had a nice, pleasant discussion, me, him, Dan Merle, and Andy Signor, and after it, even Max kind of turned to me and Dan and goes, you know, after talking about this movie, I actually think I like it more. But all his stuff, I agree, was valid. This hashtag of Rey being a Mary Sue and all that kind of stuff, that's different. That's Twitter. That's the internet. That's the explosion of common sense and just taking things out of context and blowing it up. That's what the internet does. But at the base of what Max Landis was bringing up about Star Wars and the writing of some of the characters are actually very justified. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with people questioning that stuff. But I also agree with some of the stuff that I've seen put out there by Chris Taylor and Pablo Hidalgo and even Paul S. Kemp, the author of The Lords of the Sith, brought up a good point about Star Wars paints in broad strokes. That's what it is. It's a myth. It's a modern myth. It's an epic. You know, we can look at what Peter Jackson did with the Lord of the Rings trilogy in the early 2000s, and that was a little bit different. I sometimes wish Star Wars could reach those levels of realism mixed with myth. But we're not going to get that. And that's not just because of it's Disney or Disney-fied. We never were going to get that. Look at Return of the Jedi. The Ewoks, for God's sakes, are beating people with sticks. That's as deep as we're going to get in Star Wars. It is myth. It is broad strokes. I agree with Paul S. Kemp. So where I'm at, and I hope where you can get at, is if you love this movie, don't worry about what other people are thinking and saying and tweeting. Don't worry about any of that stuff. Don't get caught into it. Read your articles and all that kind of stuff and read your theories and have fun. But if you love Star Wars, you probably love this movie. And there's a lot of different reasons. And number one, it's just fun. It's just fun. And New Hope in 1977, which was a different time, my friends, was fun. We are coming out of a dark period in real life, politically, war, Vietnam, all that kind of stuff. Lucas touched on those tones, of course, but he wrapped it up in fun. He wrapped it up in myth, wrapped it up in simple, straightforward storytelling, which is the hero's journey. You need those things. So I no longer, get caught up and was Force Awakens a rehash? Yeah, you know what? Absolutely. Parts of The Force Awakens were a rehash of A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, even a little bit of the prequel stuff was in there. And that's because it's all kind of the simple, straightforward hero's journey. And if you want to go see some deeper movies, go for it. Go for it. Have fun. And I don't take that away from anyone. I have crawled up inside the Star Wars nerd bubble, though, and just absolutely love the movie. And I myself am no longer asking the questions I was asking after my first and second viewing. Well, how come Han said that line? There's a couple beats, and there's some edits that they needed in some of these scenes. And why did they have a trench run? All those things I asked, and they're fair. And they're fair to ask, and I still kind of believe them. But I'm not putting those things in front of my joy of this movie, because what I do love... And for the record, I'm not even worried what George Lucas thinks about this, all right? I'm not, nor should you be. And I'm actually one of the people that's been trying to soften the public stance on Lucas for a couple of years now, because I still think this is his world that we are all living in, and he's the creator. We should all pay him respect, no matter what he thinks about The Force Awakens. But what The Force Awakens has done is, to me, brought new layers to peel back on the Star Wars story. That is what is so much fun. The prequels did it too. Lest we forget, the prequels were the first time we heard the name Darth Plagueis the Wise, the name that has us in a tizzy now. So say all you will about the prequels, but a lot of you know my stance on those. Bad movies, good stories, and a lot to the Star Wars saga can be pulled from those movies. And which is why I love the Clone Wars and all those series, and even Rebels now, which is doing a good job, but with new canon. A lot of the new canon books have done a good job of obviously adding to the stories, whether we like all the books and comics or not. But The Force Awakens really, I thought, delivered on giving us new layers of characters, side stories, and backstories, and fun. And that's what we love as fans growing up in the 80s, or whenever you discovered Star Wars. But I will say, growing up during the time of it, and being a kid in 83... and having all these toys hanging on the shelves, all those sad Lobots, as Joseph Scrimshaw would say, we as fans, man, we dug in there and created a lot of these stories. All right, you know, some of the names on the figures were Hammerhead, Walrus Man. Now it's Ponda Baba, but back then it was you got Walrus Man, right? We were the ones as fans that kind of dug in and created the own stories and forced the expansion of the universe, I think. And Force Awakens kind of plays to that, and it does it a little bit for us. There's a lot there. And if you're just a casual Star Wars fan, you're going to go watch The Force Awakens, and you're going to know the main characters now, and you're going to see the old characters you love, and you're going to see some things you remember, and it's familiar, and it's fun. And that's what the movie needed to do on one level. But for the deep Star Wars fans, the one who have been tracking new canon going back a couple years now, there was little morsels of treats that we got to peel back and learn afterwards. I didn't know until the third viewing that Snap Wexley was in there. I kept calling him the new Porkins. Then it's like, oh, he's Snap Wexley. He's from Aftermath, the planet that the Resistance base is on, Dakar. That was mentioned in Lost Stars. Oh, didn't quite put that together, even though I just finished reading the book, because so many new planets and characters' names kind of float into your mind now with all these books and comics. It kind of can kind of get washed over into one giant sea of canon. But to learn all that kind of stuff, it started to bring out excitement. And then I got the visual dictionary or the visual encyclopedia, one of the smart words, dictionary, encyclopedia, I don't know. I bought that, and right away, you look through it and you start learning some things, but then you start picking up on things that were cut from the movie. And since then, at the time of this broadcast, the deleted scenes have come out there. There's been articles about them. But I was already picking up on those just by reading the visual encyclopedia and talking about it and kind of watching the movie again. General Hux, in his what I call the Third Reich speech, which actually wasn't one of my favorite parts of the movie early on, my first couple viewings, I thought it was too over the top and just simplistic, but I also wasn't paying attention to the words, apparently, because the third time I went, oh, Hux is answering a lot of questions in some of the stuff he says to Snoke and some of the stuff he says in that speech. He's explaining a lot about the history of the galaxy over the last 30 years in those lines, and now you have layers to peel back. And then you get the visual encyclopedia, and you get to the page called the Senate. And that's where stuff really starts to the layers unfold, man. You got the character Corsella, which is why I'm titling this episode The Curious Case of Corsella. I'm not going to dive into this character. It's not an episode about Corsella. We might do that one day once we learn more about this character. She's a female, a commander in the Resistance, clearly trusted by Leia. And Leia, at one point in the story, sends her to Hosnian Prime, the new seat of the Republic, to speak with the Chancellor there, Chancellor Vilcham, and a lot of the other senators and rulers. And they're all listed here. There's one from Naboo, and there's one from much other planets, other planets we've never seen or heard about or barely heard about. Even the Chancellor, who was seen briefly in the movie, the alien character with a big gray beard, he comes from a planet I'm not too familiar. It's a mid-rim Tarsan system. I'm reading this right now, is where his planet is. So just in this two-page spread alone, page 66 and 67 in the Visual Encyclopedia, we start to learn a lot. we start to learn about the Galactic Concordance, which was signed between the Empire and the New Republic following the battles of Endor and Jakku and the fall of the Empire and all that kind of stuff. And you get the idea that the Empire was kind of sent away to a corner of the galaxy. And out of that rose the First Order. And that's said in the opening crawl, of course, but in the opening crawl, it hints at from the ashes of the Empire comes the First Order. Well, you just takes a little bit of reading to learn and start to peel back what all that meant and how the First Order was off doing things by themselves, not under the watchful eye of the Senate anymore, of the Republic. And it was people like Princess Leia who started to feel a little weird about what the First Order was doing in secret in uncharted parts of the galaxy that they couldn't get to. And the Senate, which it starts to play out in Aftermath, Chuck Wendig's book, which is why I think Wendig will get justified a little bit overdue kudos for writing a series. We'll see what the trilogy is. A series that sets up a lot of what the galaxy was like after the fall of the Empire and leading to Force Awakens. I think a lot is really in that. Mon Mothma herself talks about, you know, not wanting to start an army, not wanting to rule by fear or military force, but by choice through democracy, true democracy. And all that kind of led to the First Order growing on its own and clearly now turning a planet into a weapon, whether you feel that's a rehash of the Death Star. And it is. Abrams has come out and said, no, the First Order, we made that a clear-cut decision. The First Order was kind of trying to improve. They thought they were better than the Empire, an extension and growth of the Empire for sure, but better than the Empire. So they wanted to build the bigger planet, the bigger weapon to prove that they were that much better than the Empire. Okay, that's JJ's explanation of it. It's not my favorite one. I still could have done without Starkiller Base, or at least Starkiller Base in a Death Star-like form, but I get it now. And I really, the first time, I got to be honest, I might have even been softer in my stance in my gut reaction episode. I was not happy with not only did you have Starkiller Base reminiscent of the Death Star, it blew up five planets. And the reason I kind of just didn't pick up on a lot of that stuff is I was kind of in my head just like, I get it. You blew up one, now you can blow up five planets, and it's a bigger, badder Death Star. And I wasn't happy with that decision. But then, again, on the third viewing, I started picking up a lot of the stuff that Hux was saying, and it made sense. And, you know, through the help of Joseph Scrimshaw and I kind of talking about it on our other episodes here in Force Center, you know, that's a key scene. The Starkiller Base is taken out the Hosnian system, taken out the ruling parties of the galaxy. Now that starts to become deeper to me. And this simple rehash plot point that people are getting hung up on now has deeper meaning for me upon further viewing and upon learning a little bit more about it, which brings us back to Cor Sela. This character is in the movie. Cor Sela is on the balcony when the Starkiller sunray, for lack of a better term, comes tearing towards Hosnian Prime. She is on the balcony with all these ruling parties, including Chancellor Vilchem, who's right next to her with his beard flowing in the wind, and she dies. Leia sent her there on a diplomatic mission to plead the case. Cor Sela dies for the Resistance, trying to state their claim, because it has become clear, and it will probably become more clear in new canon material that comes out, that Princess Leia, now General Leia, was starting to be regarded as kind of an alarmist, a military warmongering alarmist who was saying there's something going on with the First Order that we don't know about, and they're a problem, they're a threat, and the Republic should do something about it, and Republic didn't. And they discounted Leia, and they discounted the Resistance. If you read the book Before the Awakening, which I have, Greg Rucka, the great comic book writer, wrote the book Before the Awakening, and it's not marketed as young adult, I don't think, but it kind of has that feel to it. I kind of get the sense you could put it in that. But Rucka himself's not a young adult author at all, so I don't even know why I'm picking up on that vibe of the book. But it tells three stories of Finn, FN-2187 as it were, Rey, and Poe. And I don't want to go into any of it and spoil it all. It's a good, quick read. Collectively, the whole book's like 180 pages or less. I do recommend you pick it up, and I do recommend you read it. It might shed some light on some things. It definitely does when it comes to the story of Poe Dameron. It tells how he left the Republic, which did have a modest military and navy. He left the Republic to join the Resistance. It tells the story. And in that, you kind of get a little bit more. More layers are peeled back about how the Republic had just simply, the new Republic, had started to become as corrupt and kind of comfortable in its power as the old Republic. Maybe not as evil, certainly not an empire. But it had discounted the First Order, discounted Princess Leia, which is one of the reasons she had to get Admiral Ackbar out of retirement. He was retired, living on his planet, swimming around peacefully. And she said, you got to come back. Also, some of the other characters are in Before the Awakening Poe Dameron story that kind of add to The Force Awakens, adds to the level. And that is what I love about The Force Awakens. First viewing, second viewing. I'm looking at Cor Sela on the balcony in Hosnian Prime, and I'm not picking up on it. I'm not picking up at how important that moment was. It's a deleted scene, and I understand JJ's not too big on deleted scenes, so we don't know if we'll see some of this stuff. He kind of feels as though, nope, once the director puts the movie out, that's what the movie is. That's the story. That's the film. However, JJ might find himself in a different realm when it comes to Star Wars, because this is, now that we know about it, and now that it's in this visual encyclopedia, the character of Cor Sela, the character of Chancellor Vilchim, these are important characters. They now have weight and merit, and we as fans are hungry for what we call canon, what we all know as the actual truth of this universe that we like to crawl around in. So the character of Cor Sela is important. We're going to want to hear her story, and I, for one, would love to see some of the deleted scenes that have come out. And none more than this one. I think the reason this one got cut is it just didn't move the story along in a fast enough pace. But more importantly, it probably was political in nature. And I would not feel... I would agree, I guess I should say, if Kasdan and Abrams and everyone said, with what the prequels brought up, with too much political ramblings, maybe we want to go the other direction and have next to none. I could have done with a little bit, because it would probably help the story a little bit if we had a little bit more understanding of what Leia and the Resistance did. I think that was, again, to make it for the general public. You remember the Empire? You remember the Rebels? Well, here they are again, all right? It's a new generation. That's the general audience. Those are the people seeing it again and again and having just simple fun with this new movie. But we as Star Wars fans who are a little bit higher up and crave that deeper knowledge, I think we would have liked to see how did we get from the Battle of Endor, yub-nubbing around, celebrating with the Ewoks, to here's 30 years later and the New Republic is kind of... They're in control or not in control. The First Order's there. The Resistance, wait, that's just the Rebels again? How did Leia get from Rebel to in control to Rebel again? Well, the story's now becoming more clear, and I think I'm excited to hear more about things like the Galactic Concordance and all that kind of stuff. The movie could have been, the story could have used just a little bit more of that. We get a little bit of Leia. I mean, it would make more sense because Leia talked about needing to know more information, and we're desperate for information. That came up a few times. And even the first and second viewing, I just didn't grasp that. This First Order is so big, they've built a planet, and I know some people view that as a hipster, ironic plot hole. No one knew they were building the whole planet and turning it into a gun. Yeah, they didn't, but it's explained in some of these books and by Abrams and everyone that the First Order was doing it by himself. Like, you couldn't see it. It was like you needed a UN team to go in and impose sanctions, and that wasn't happening. And the Resistance started to realize something was going on. Leia realized something was going on, and there's part of Leia's motivations is kind of a desperate search around the galaxy for more clues as to what the First Order is doing. Which is why the Resistance is kind of ragtag and underfunded and under-equipped. And all that stuff starts to make sense.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right?
For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Dense. So, if you haven't picked up on that stuff yet, I hope, for your love of the movie, that you get to. And that's why when someone says to me, Star Wars wasn't that good, it was a rehash, I just look at them and want to say, are you aware of Corsella? And what that character's importance to the story is, and why it's a sad, tragic moment when she realizes she's about to die on the balcony on Hosnian Prime. If you're not a Star Wars fan, that scene is not going to have weight to you. If you're not a Star Wars fan, realizing, and for me it was after a couple of viewings, that Snap Wexley, Temin Wexley, daughter of Nora Wexley, who fought in the Battle of Endor, flew a Y-Wing, my beloved Y-Wings. When you see him and realize that he is in The Force Awakens, now a veteran fighter, flying a reconnaissance on a important reconnaissance mission to determine the location of Starkiller Base, which also unfortunately led the First Order back to the Resistance, if you don't see that character and realize how important it is to see that character, then I get it. You're just not a giant Star Wars fan and you enjoy the movie on a different level. If you see the female X-Wing pilot and go, oh, hey, it's a female X-Wing pilot, good for you. You might also recognize her from Game of Thrones as one of the Sand Snakes. Or you can look at the character like I do now. Go, oh, that's Jess Tester Pava. A character of importance. A character of history. A character that we now, I want an action figure of her. I want an action figure of some of these side characters. Which is exactly what we felt like in the 80s. If you weren't there, I'm flipping through the book, by the way. I'm doing that now. You can hear it in the background. I'm looking at some of the stuff with Maz Kanata, all that kind of stuff. I sidetracked myself. But back in the 80s, and I'm not taking away from anyone who discovered Star Wars in the 90s or in the 2000s, but when you were there at the time and the information was sparse, Sometimes all you had to go on was the figure you had in your hands and what it said on the card. And that was exciting. So now, when I watch Force Awakens and I see a character like Jess Tester flying around, to me it's not just it's a female X-Wing pilot. It's a character with weight and a backstory. And that's fun. And that is the Star Wars universe. And that is where, to me, The Force Awakens has succeeded on a level that people don't quite understand if you're outside the Star Wars bubble. And God bless you if you are. I don't want everyone in the bubble. The bubble's big enough. Which is why I love, this is why I love Kylo Ren. Because if you dig in deeper to Kylo Ren and you get the story and it starts to unfold, the problems I have with Han Solo's death scene, which I do have problems with, as just a film goer. But as a Star Wars fan, it now has greater weight to me because the story and the levels and the conflict inside Kylo Ren are some of the best villain work in any of the Star Wars things. It is a deep villain now. And I hope he continues to be a villain. Some of you may have seen me on Movie Fights doing the Star Wars episode. And I pitched my Star Wars Episode 8. I'm calling it The Reign of the First Order. And in it, I want Benicio del Toro, I believe already cast in it, in the movie. I want him to be a villain. I want him to be Snoke's true right-hand man. Ren is just his apprentice and trainee and the guy he's grooming. But Benicio del Toro is kind of the bad guy. And I want that character to emerge, disrupt the training between Luke and Rey. It's too much for Luke to handle. He and Rey are going to go find the one person he feels can help them. Meanwhile, Ren needs to prove himself to Snoke. Ren, I don't think, should be good, at least not an 8. He should not go to the light side, if at all, until the end of Episode 9. I want Ren to become the big baddie that we want him to be. And seeing the growth of that character in a more fulfilling way than even we saw with Darth Vader, Anakin turning into Darth, was not as fulfilling as we probably would have wanted in the prequels, of course. But I want to see that now with Ren. So I want Episode 8 to be Luke versus Del Toro's character versus Kylo Ren and literally have a three-way lightsaber dance like it's an episode of SmackDown in 1999. I want these three to fight. I can see Luke dying and his dying breath sends Rey off to search for her mother. And Ren kills Del Toro and Skywalker, returns to Snoke, Av. The rightful right-hand man to Snoke. You can go to the Movie Fights episode on Screen Junkies YouTube page and see my pitch in full. But that's kind of where I want 8 to go. It's where I want Ren to go. And all that excitement and all that prognosticating comes out of diving into the layers of The Force Awakens, which is, again, why I think this movie has succeeded so much. I guess we should talk about what everyone's talking about, is who are Rey's parents? You know, actually, I don't have a lot of theories. I think it's Luke. I think that's her father. I haven't read the novelization yet. It is being shipped to me right now. Some of you have read it or listened to the audiobooks, and I think there's some clues. Luke has some recognition of who this character is. His facial descriptions are described as kind of knowing who it is. That's all good. That's all good. I think I don't want to overthink this one. I like some of the theories about her being related to Kenobi. I actually do. If it comes out that she's the great-granddaughter of Obi-Wan Kenobi, I'm fine with that. If she's the love child or the great-granddaughter of the love child of Shmi and Qui-Gon Jinn, I'm good with that, too. I'd be good with just about anything. But I do feel, though, she's a Skywalker, and I do feel that is what this story is about. The prequels were about Anakin Skywalker turning into Darth Vader. The original trilogy was about a farm boy discovering who his father was and bringing what we thought at the time was balance to the Force. Story of Luke Skywalker. So I feel that this trilogy, 7, 8, 9, has to be the story of a Skywalker. It kind of wouldn't make sense that it's just the story of a Solo and the story of a Kenobi. Those would be cool layers, but this is a Skywalker story. That's what Star Wars is. So I don't see it at this point as any other way. There's convincing cases for her not being Luke Skywalker's daughter or related to her related to him or Leia at all. I don't know. I can agree with all that stuff too, but I haven't really thought much beyond that. I just think she's a Skywalker. I just kind of think it has to be that way. But what are your theories? I'm sure you have them. You can follow me at Force Center Pod and at Ken Epsock and hashtag Spotlight Star Wars and tell me all your wonderful, wonderful, wonderful theories of who is Rey. The story we want to know. Going to the hashtag right now, Spotlight Star Wars. That's the hashtag you use if you want to talk to me and have a conversation. Well, there's not a lot out there. You guys have been celebrating the holidays and seeing the movies, so not much direct questions. I will say Mike Curry had an interesting Spotlight Star Wars admission. He admitted something. He goes, here's my Star Wars The Force Awakens confession. I felt more emotions watching the Falcon get bounced around than Han's death. Big statement, Mike. But you know what, Mike? I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong. I think the death of Han Solo... Look, I don't want to say it was mishandled. That's pompous for me, an outsider, to say that about a team of successful and accomplished professionals, to say they mishandled the death of Han Solo. But I think it's some level of truth is buried in there. We all saw Han's death coming, some of us going into the movie, and some of us once he got to that scene in the movie. It was telegraphed. And that's okay. Sometimes it doesn't need to be a Game of Thrones surprise head chopping off. None of that. I think that was fine. I just had a little problem with the dialogue in the moment, and I think it tugged on heartstrings that it hadn't yet earned from us. And I think the backstory of Ren and Han and Leia was wedged in a little too fast. There could have been other things that they did with it. That I do agree with some of the criticism, but I still thought it was a good moment in the movie, and you watch it again and again, and it shot beautifully. There's the light side, the dark side, it all goes dark. I thought Adam Driver did great with the scene, and Harrison Ford did great the whole movie, so I'm fine with it as a fan. But I didn't react to it. I kept saying on many shows, from Schmoes to this show to Screen Junkies, everything else, that I was going to cry in Force Awakens, especially if Han died. If Han died, I was going to cry. I didn't. I didn't cry. Not in other five viewings. But I cheered when I first saw the Falcon, much like Mike said he got emotion. And I know other people, some who saw it with me, cried at the first scene of the Falcon. You're not alone, Mike. I cried. I got teary-eyed at some of the Solo stuff and some of the other things. Seeing Han for the first time and Chewie, even though we had seen the Chewie were home in the trailer, or at least a different take of it. But we saw that moment. But yeah, the actual death of Han didn't affect me as much as maybe I thought it would going in, which is okay. It's okay. So, Mike, you're not alone. Stephen Patrick Helm says, I've always enjoyed the way, Ken Napsok says, hey, that's me, says Star Wars on Spotlight Star Wars. Stephen, you may have heard me explain it on an early edition of Spotlight Star Wars, but generally when I say welcome to Spotlight Star Wars, we look at Star Wars, the greatest saga ever told. When we hear me do the drawn-out Star Wars, that is actually an ode to some of the first trailers. If you go watch the first trailer of, it's a simple one. Trailers are so different now. Side note, the modernized version of the Empire Strikes Back trailer that's making the rounds around the internet is amazing. It's actually really good. It's fun. Trailers have changed. And if you go back to the first trailer for Star Wars, all the times have changed. And it's in space. This could be happening now. At one point, the announcer towards the end says something very similar to Star Wars. And I've always said Star Wars that way, whether it be on Schmoes or here, very intentionally. So, Stephen, I appreciate you noticing that and recognizing that. Awesome, says he's underscore David Cabal. Awesome. He says, this is a stretch. What if episode 8, Rian Johnson does time travel and brings back a young Han Solo? Awesome. That is not awesome. It's obviously a reference to Johnson doing Looper. It's an interesting theory. But with a young Han Solo movie coming out, I would we're already getting our young Han. Though, maybe your theory, David, is that it's a good marketing tool. Hey, here's you want to see more of this young character? We'll go see the movie next year. I don't think they'll do that, though. I really don't think they'll do that. I think it's going to be a dark movie. And I don't think time travel really works inside the Star Wars universe. It didn't really work inside the Star Trek rebooted universe, but time travel had appeared in Star Trek before. in the movies and whatnot, but I'm not a Star Trek expert, so I let someone else. I let Scott Mance tell me if old Spock and young Spock really worked. I enjoyed it in the first movie, not so much later on in Into Darkness. It was a kind of a plot convenience when he reappeared. But as far as Star Wars, I don't think time travel actually really belongs. So awesome. Good theory. And you said it's a stretch. Not one I'd be happy with if that happened to come true. So that's all in the questions right now. If you're kind of new to the show, we've got a lot of people who have listened and joined. We appreciate your support. You've made us number one on Podomatic for a few days, if not weeks, running. And on iTunes, we've got as high as number 20 in TV and film, which, considering the amount of podcasts out there in the world and the amount of Star Wars podcasts out there in the world, me, Joseph Scrimshaw, and Jennifer Landa appreciate your support. Joseph and I's breakdown of The Force Awakens can be found here on this channel, and it did quite well. And please, if you haven't already, listen to Jennifer Landa's second episode of The Jedi Beat, her excellent NPR-style Star Wars show. But again, if you're new to the Force Center podcast feed, what we are is a podcast feed with several different shows talking about Star Wars. This show right now, Spotlight Star Wars, is just me. It's a monologue from me to you about Star Wars. It actually began on my other podcast feed, The Knapsack Files, something for me to do after I'd left Jedi Alliance, actually right before Jedi Alliance. I kind of knew I was going to have to leave, and I wanted to keep my my Star Wars brand going. And Spotlight Star Wars kind of morphed into the Force Center podcast feed. So you can subscribe, and you get this show. You get Force Center, our main show. You get Jennifer Landa's Jedi Beat. Got a new show from Joseph Scrimshaw coming this year too, and then I'm going to be doing interviews with Star Wars fans, just open-ended interviews about what it is and what you love about being a Star Wars fan with some of my friends around town, and who knows, maybe others. So that is what's going on. If you're new, thanks for joining. Subscribe, rate, and review. And if you have a question or you want to join the conversation for this show, just follow at Force Center Pod and hashtag Spotlight Star Wars, and we will have that conversation. So that is it. I'm going to go read the Star Wars Visual Encyclopedia for The Force Awakens one more time to see what else I can learn. You guys have a great beginning to 2016.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.